Okay.
Hush.
What was that?
No, I was like admiring the beauty.
Huh?
I was admiring the...
I got it. Okay. In the holy tongue, a lamb is called a...
Tzom?
Keves.
And what's a tzom?
Okay, the word tzom is a more of a generic word. Mm-hmm. The word tzom includes in it lambs and goats, mm-hmm. just to know Hebrew. I know English, tzom is flocks. Flocks means animals, but it only is in reference to both. Versus the specific keves versus eis. Now, there are other names for lambs, but I want to use the word keves. What you'll notice if you look inside the Chumash properly, sometimes it's keves, that's chaf, veis, sin, keves, and sometimes it's chesev. Modern Hebrew is irrelevant. I'm talking about the real Hebrew. In the Torah, a lamb or lambs will be keves, kevasim, chesev, chesavim, chaf, sin, veis, which is amazing.
Same letters switch.
The first letter is always the same, and the veis and the shin sometimes will be one way, sometimes another way. I know this is something very little, very nuanced, so just shelve it. We'll get back to that. And there was a mimer that I just learned that for me, it mamish spoke to me about the following theme that we always learn about and we always have to deal with, right? The Hebrew term for the theme is bittul. The English term for that will be humility or submission, which is a big part of life. We are struggling with the ego versus the emes, which are not always aligned. Sometimes they are in opposition. And this is a big part of our avoda. But I want to take a step back and share with you a long story, in short, as written by the previous Rebbe. The previous Rebbe wrote a series of stories sharing with us the history of Lubavitch. Lubavitch, not only the group, but even the city. In other words, Lubavitch became the headquarters for Lubavitch HaChassidim during the life of the Mittel Rebbe. But the village was established there as a Jewish village many, many, many generations prior. And everything works. You live exactly where you're meant to live. What Lubavitch represents is very much in tune with the founding fathers and the unique personalities that lived in Lubavitch. The Friedrich Rebbe writes a lot about that in his book, and he also writes a lot about the history of the Alter Rebbe's father, whose name was Baruch, who actually, just to know by the way, he eventually became a great follower of the Baal Shem Tov, and when he was about to father the Alter Rebbe after his wife was pregnant, one of the things that the Baal Shem Tov told him is that the Alter Rebbe should not be initiated to Chassidus by the parents. He must find it on his own. And I would interpret that for us, that when it comes to observance, which is something external, of ultimate importance, as far as God is concerned, our behavior is of the ultimate importance. That is something that we have to parent our children in, right? It would be irresponsible to have the attitude, no, let them find it on their own, you know, and then it will be more meaningful and more truthful and they'll own it more. No. Right, if my kid is about to run across the street, just as an example, you know, I don't care if he gets it, if he doesn't get it. In other words, the bottom line, the behavior is something that we are chayev to be machana, chanoich lanad. In contrast, the attitude that our children have with their Yiddishkeit, and let's acknowledge that there are different hashkafas in the way we observe. And let's always realize by now that even though nothing wrong, I'm a Lubavitcher, we have it right, we're so lucky, and I mean that. Some people need another flavor for them to get it better, and or ultimately everyone will become a Lubavitcher Chassid, but they have to get there on their own. Because when people struggle with meaning and the neshama only, and they go down this path and they go down that path, when they stumble upon that which for them is their truth with a capital T, they'll own it. And when we introduce it many a time, we will delay them of getting to where they need to get. Just parenthetically, why you think about it, why wouldn't Rav Baruch want for the Alter Rebbe to know right away about Chassidus? He dafka didn't want the Alter Rebbe was meant to discover it on his own, which he did. And it was a lot of anguish that comes with it. And another side thing, which might not be such a big side thing, that sometimes people discover things later in life, whatever that might be, and that discovery, when they are of great meaning, they bring joy and pain. The joy is, wow, now I got it, finally. And the pain could be, why didn't anyone tell me that before? On whatever level that is for you. And you see that there are certain things that will only have their effect on you when you came to it on your own. And if the price of getting there is the pain of being in the dark, it must have been worthwhile because it was God's plan. This is all just an aside, as that Rav Baruch was told by the Baal Shem Tov not to tell the Alter Rebbe b'chlal about Chassidus. So this is a good thing. Bottom line, we educate our kids to be frum. But how to be frum, with what flavor, it's much greater when people discover it on their own. I can say I'm a Lubavitcher person, and I did not give that option to my kids. It was Lubavitch, to the best that I knew. But in Lubavitch, there are so many Lubavitch. Mm-hmm. Like, so many.
Especially here,
because there's more tolerance, b'chlal. Yeah. And there has to be a point where, if they are frum, but if they're not hurting themselves, if they're not on drugs, then let them be. Okay, but coming back to what I want to get to. So part of Rav Baruch's, the Alter Rebbe's father was orphaned, father and mother, I forgot when he was 12, 13, 14, when he just became a man, very young. Today it's a child. He wasn't a child, but he was not an adult. And he had a sister, and his sister settled herself in the city of her parents, and he went on a search. Today we live in a world that people do searches through technology. That's the good part of technology. Then, for you to hear new ideas, for you to see new things, you needed to travel. If you go to one place, you're stuck in that bubble. And he went, and he traveled, and he witnessed, and a little bit of a background behind the story. Ad hayoyim hazeh, until today, there is a unspoken, which is much worse, attitude that many people have, in which when they have something of value that the other does not, they hold themselves arrogantly as higher than thou. That's something that's in humanity, something that we all have to grow out of. Right? It's one thing to be proud of that I have something that you don't. The other thing is to be arrogant. Let's just leave those words. And in the Fruma world, until Hasidim, which this really began before the Baal Shem Tov, he just brought it out, this is until today, due to the fact that we hold of such great value by the men to be scholarly, to be a Talmud Chacham, till today, if someone is the Am Ha'aretz, if someone is an ignoramus, they're like nothing almost. They are wrongfully looked down to. That prevails until now. People don't own up how much this is relevant right now. Mamish. And it was much stronger than externally because of the people's understanding that it's wrong, so they think that they'll hide it. They'll ignore it. It will go away. It makes it even worse. But that was a norm. Are you learn it or you not learn it? And I'm a audits. Simple. That was the way everyone became dismissed. And that was something that caused a lot of pain. Because unlike today,
were people who want to learn, have access. In those days, if you were not, if you didn't get the head start of being born and being brought to cheder, being taught how to read, being taught Mishnayos and Gemara, it was impossible almost to catch up. Like Rabbi Akiva, who did that? There were no books, there were no teachers, you lived wherever you lived. You were like stuck in a certain place. And it's very humiliating because from a people, because for us, Ruchnius is more important than Gashmius. Gashmius, everyone on some level, go work, you know, I might win the lottery. There was always this dream, this fantasy, I'll make it. When it comes to learning, there's no lottery. You learn, you'll know. You won't learn, you won't know. And that's the way it worked. Until today, outside Hasidic shuls, I want you to know, if your sons or husbands will go there, they will be measured on the amount of information they know on a very deep level. Some of it is fantastic because you pick up the standard, you inspire children, you know, you got to get there, like do well. And on a deeper level, it's very humiliating. It's bad. And it leads to a lot of arrogance. And this is just a human phenomenon. In that world where this was very common by everyone, people that would really look down at the Am HaAretz would see himself as a humble person. And that's all of us. In other words, they were taka humble, and there was a part of their humility that they paid a price for. They were big anavim. But they had this arrogance that they couldn't see. This arrogance manifests in there not being a real brotherhood amongst people. Because what's a clique? The good part of any clique is that within the clique, everyone is they're chaverim, friends, chaverois, however you call it by the woman. The negative part of the clique is that however the clique non-verbally measures whatever is needed to join the clique, whoever does not have it cannot break in there. You're not in. You're not part of the chevra, which is very painful for the people outside the clique. So the manifestation of this type of arrogance is that people that have this attitude, in this case towards Amaratzim, would never really befriend them, and they would be out. Versus amongst Hasidim, because of a lot of this awareness that the Baal Shem Tov brought into the world and the Rabbeim spoke about it the whole time, of course there's arrogance and a lot needs to get better, no doubt. But this type of arrogance is something that people see. You can't hide it, you can't trick it. When I was in a very special non-Chabad yeshiva, in the dining room, every class only sat with themselves. A person in class A to sit with even the Bachram of class B, like, who are you? You're that type of looking, you don't belong here. And a teacher to sit on the table of it, they never ate in public, there was something to that, it was unheard of. It was the biggest disrespect. And I came over here and Rabbi Shachat would sit with the table and have lunch with all the guys that all ate together. And Rabbi Reichik and Rabbi Lobkowski. And that was a wow in a good way. And it wasn't that there wasn't respect. That also, that's a separate thing. But this was a certain type of closeness.
Friendship.
Closeness of friendship that comes when you don't have this type of arrogance. And that was an illness that was before the Baal Shem Tov, you couldn't heal it, because that's the whole point. When a person thinks they're arrogant, they know, okay, you know, even if I'm not going to better myself, at least I know I'm arrogant. People in this bubble never saw it in them. And the story is that Rav Baruch is traveling and he's meeting all these different types of communities. And let's not take away that amongst the then non-Hasidic community, there were great scholars. That was the only virtue. That was the greatest thing. And everyone is learning. And so, and that also brings a different type of refinement. And there was this guy, Reuven. Reuven was a butcher. He was the classic Am HaAretz. He was born into a home. He never was taken to school. He barely knew how to read. And he lived in a city where everyone looked down at him. Not externally. Halavai. No, everyone smiled and everything, but they looked at him, you do ama aretz. I know this attitude. You're an ignoramus. And he made it, relatively made it. He had three daughters. When he was older, he wanted for his daughters to do the best shidduch. What was the mindset? Until now, what is the mindset? Is, okay, no one is perfect. Let's get at least the guy that has what I find most important. In this world, the most important is to be a scholar. So his two eldest son-in-law were great scholars. They were great people. And at some point, this butcher met the Chevra Kadisha. I know Chevra Kadisha is a horrible world right now. No, none of us want to meet the Chevra Kadisha. The Chevra Kadisha is an organization that they prepare the bodies for burial. Chevra Kadisha. The word Chevra Kadisha was used for this, and there was a secretive society. I don't know when it began. It began way before the Baal Shem Tov. Lahavdil, who heard about the Masons here? Masons, no, it's a group of people. And their mission, at least to my limited knowledge, is to do good. Their purpose is to do good and kindness. But it's a secretive society. You have to earn getting in there. And they have gatherings. And they probably discuss people or institutions that they feel have to be supported. Lahavdil, we had that for hundreds of years. They were known as the Chevra Kadisha. They would travel from village to village. And they would know who needs parnasa help, who needs chizuk. And there would be a whole group of hidden tzaddikim, amazing, and they would gather and they would discuss. So this Chevra Kadisha, they traveled to this city where this Reuven lived, Dombrosil. I almost have it right. And they found that a guy like him who was so refined and so, and they felt how, let's say, this unique type of racism of you're not ma'aretz was wounding him, and they lifted him up. And after that experience that he underwent with the Chevra Kadisha, he had his final daughter. He was looking for someone who was connected to this group. And he found a son-in-law called Yitzchak Shol. And Yitzchak Shol was also learned. But the difference between Yitzchak Shol and the other older son-in-laws or his brother, the brother-in-laws were very reclusive. They did not interact with people. It's like a waste of time. It was for them considered virtuous to be a hermit-like. Hermit-like, we know these people. Not a hermit-like because they were learning. Learning or davening. Like, there was no normal human socialization, which is extremely unhealthy, psychologically. And these people are cruel people. I know what I'm saying, like cruel. But they don't see that. But this is not about the cruelty that this brings. This is about the dismissiveness, the real arrogance. And they thought they were humble. So Baruch is there. Baruch was confused. Which group should he identify with better? With the Talmid HaChachamim who were learning and this and that? Or with the beginning, the grassroots of the Hasidic movement, where what they celebrated was a lot of closeness amongst people, the non-judgmentalist on another Jew, the understanding that the core value that we have is that we're Jewish. That is so beyond any other thing. It doesn't mean that there aren't other things. But if you're not Jewish, you're out. We have that. You're not in the clique. If you're Jewish, you are in the clique like anyone else. And that was something that Yitzchak Shol had. And he realized how this Baruch, he was, I don't know how then, 15, 16, 17, he was like, he was looking at this family. He was looking at two young married men. And he didn't know which way to go. So what Yitzchak Shol did was, is that on Simchas Torah, when the Alter Rebbe's father was there, by us, I take pride, we don't give out honors by hakafas. It's so good. You have no idea how many fights you have in shuls when people feel dishonored. And dishonored is who's getting the first hakafa, who's getting the first sefer Torah. Like it's a whole politics. It's like making a chuppah.
Now it's money.
And you have to be careful who are you, who's getting what bracha. It's a lot of anguish. So if you can avoid it, avoid it. I just avoid it. It's a good strategy sometimes in life. Then it was a who's getting what hakafa. So this guy, Yitzchak Shol, walked over to him. He says, Gabai, for the fifth hakafa, the city, he says, have so many anavim. There are so many humble people in the city. We have to give them recognition for their humility. He says, say that all of the anavim should come and take a sefer Torah. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds funny, but we should laugh at ourselves. So he backs in the Biba, and he says, and he says that Ismail Chabad, for this Akafa, all of the Anavim. And he says, and we witnessed how all of these elderly scholars came running to the Bima. And each one wanted a Sefer Torah. And then there was the guy that got the fourth. There were five Sefer, the fourth, almost the second to last. The next morning, men go to the mikveh every day, Chassidus Shemen, ideally. So Yitzchak Shaul was there, Baruch was there, and that fourth guy was in the mikveh. So Yitzchak Shaul turns to the guy and he says, now I know that I have to give you more respect. I want to apologize. I never realized that you're the fourth greatest anav of this city. He got the fourth. The guy says, I'm the fourth? He says, no, I'm not the fourth greatest anav. He says, the other three were chutzpin yakis, that they took it before me. He wanted Baruch to hear that. Now, I laughed when I saw it, and I finally realized that I'm laughing at me. And whoever's laughing, you're laughing at you, because that's the most important thing. In other words, that there are certain faults that we know that we have. I'm not saying that it makes it go away, but at least we know where we're standing. The delusion that it takes us a lifetime to get rid of is that there are certain things that we have it so wrong, and that it's hopeless. It's helpless, because how can I fix something? At least let me own up. And that's what happens. That's what happens. The reason why it's taking so much time, I think the bad midos, like I'm not talking about the terrible midos. That's something that actually could be better. It's when you don't see it, when we're blind to it. So I want to just give an intro to this idea that I'm going to share in a moment about humility, that there are many different types of humility. The explicit humility or arrogance, I don't think is something that needs a lot of explanation. You see it, you know it, we see it within us. We also have that. But then let's speak about, there's deeper, it's deeper, it's deeper. The ultimate type of humility, it comes from a place where you mamish, you don't use measuring sticks when you look at yourself nor at other people. It's very difficult to do that. Because in this world, we need to have measuring sticks and we need to have values. We have to have goals. And we don't always live up to our goals, and people around us have to have goals. If you don't have, the other side is also dangerous. I'm focusing on the exclusivity of everything is a measuring stick, brings about to a certain amount of arrogance for those who met up, and there's a certain amount of cruelty and dismissiveness for those who didn't. The solution is not to remove it. The solution is to get the right balance. But let me just focus on this inner humility. And that inner humility, just I think it's a good frame, is that when we speak about bittul, or let's psychologically, when we speak about the importance of seeing that, is it coming from my ego? In Yiddish terms, is it coming from my animal soul, or is it coming from my godly soul? Where is this coming from? And when we shift back and forth from the ego perspective and from the MSF perspective. And we all understand that. Sometimes the same thing got us very upset. Then we realize it got me upset personally. I own that. That's because I have an ego. But if I would be able to step out of my ego, I would look at it differently. That whole avoida of going from I have an ego and let me humble my ego or not make that my core. It's there. I have to go there sometimes, but let me see a more godly perspective. This tension, which is bittul, because there's a lot of humbling of the ego that either we bring upon ourselves or that life will bring upon us. So really, there's no way out of it. Look in the eyes of a 90-year-old. You'll see bittul. And look in the eyes of your kids. I'm not talking about the good part of they're young and they're confident. There's no bittul. You can't. We're not born. There is a maimed of the Alter Rebbe. This is a statement that there are many other statements. The statement is that the whole reason why we are here is to go from yesh to ayin, is to go from ego to emes. And that's something that is normally envisioned as a painful process, or there is a tension. How am I to look at it? And that, we all have that. Like, oh, this is getting me so angry. I know, now I'm on my little self, which I'll never get rid of. There is a place and a time for that. And then my little self, yeah, this is very infuriating. And then tomorrow you're going to look at the same thing and you're going to see it from a divine angle. You'll be enlightened for 10 minutes. Say, wow, I understand that needed to happen. I wish I can stay there. And these two perspectives are in conflict. In most cases, the ego and the godly are in conflict, right? Right? You understand what I'm saying? Or no? Before I go on. Yeah? That Alter Rebbe wrote a maimer by pointing out that it's possible, listen, it's possible for there to be a harmony between these two perspectives. The Alter Rebbe is not speaking about someone who's only going to live in the holy. That's not what he's talking about. That we have right now. In the moments on Yom Kippur, when we are holy, we know what that means. The Alter Rebbe is speaking to a person that has both sides, as we are destined to have. It's destiny. A tzaddik is something predestined. And quantitatively, there are very few tzaddikim. And chassidus, the Alter Rebbe's chassidus, argues that we are not meant to be tzaddikim on this level. We are meant to be human beings that learn how to manage this tension. The animal, the godly, and figure that out, and we grow in that and through that, and there is a transformation of, and ultimately, the Alter Rebbe says that we can reach a place where it's harmonious. Let me just use a few ideas that he shares. Where do you find in the world two opposites that have to contend with each other, but there is no conflict within each other? No conflict. Where one has to become battle to the other. I'm not talking about equality in a partnership, which that's another. I'm talking about a relationship between two entities that are in root opposites each other, which means that their union will mean one has to become subservient to the other. And it happens harmoniously.
Shabbos?
Let me hear.
Gashmias becoming spiritual.
Okay, very good. Put that on the shelf. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Where do we find it on even a deeper level before you come to Yiddishkeit? Mm-hmm. A harmonious union, and one has to be subservient.
Marriage?
Is it harmonious?
In many of them.
I don't think that exists. No. Only by you. No. The lack of conflict is because there's no union. The opposite.
Something in nature, like
water. Something in nature, right? Alter Rebbe says, he writes words. I mean, you have to be the divine Ruach HaKodesh. He says, in nature, you will find this in life of a human being, in every human being. He says, if we were to understand how body and soul are so opposites, and life, the way we define human life, is that there's such a harmony, and the body is mamish battle to the soul. It wants to be alive. There is never a moment where the body says, stop intruding, I need my space. Never, we mamash want to live. Like, that's why people live. Even when they have illnesses, they live because there is a desire, not only what you experience, like the bones want to live. And that means that the body has to be subservient. He gives examples. I don't know how to explain this scientifically, and I don't care. But when Chassidus gives an example, that will, which is very connected to the soul, will, your willpower is here, that when you want to pick up your hand responds immediately. That's because it's harmoniously buttled to the neshama. It gives itself over mamish. Like the will of the soul becomes the will of the hand. When we struggle in doing certain things, that's because from the soul itself, there are different desires. We have different souls. I want to eat that food. A part of my neshama, my human neshama, wants the food, and my godly neshama says, one second, it's not so kosher. So that's why I have a conflict, because there is a conflict in the souls. But whenever there is no soul conflict, the body never opposes the soul. The next example he gives, the Alter Rebbe, he says that you find this by a lamb. I'm telling you guys, I know it's a joke, it's not a joke. Let's make a business, lamb pets. Much better than dogs. Lambs. Cabins. We're living in America, it's like Egypt. So let's go back to Egypt. Let's make a few dollars. That was the Avodah Zarah. What do you think? You think we're smarter than the Egyptians? I'm sure they had dogs for many years. Then they came to the lambs. What's unique about a lamb? That the bittle that a lamb has to its master is mamish on that level. Harmonious. And the reason why so many karbanis were made out of lambs is because Hashem wanted us to reveal in the world, to tap into this capacity, to be inspired almost, of how we could reach a level of putting together these two parts in us, which is the ego versus the emes. The little me versus the yid, the neshama, we can come to a place where they harmonious unite without struggle. How do you do that? How do you do that? You can almost make this maimed into a manual. Someone should have the right language and they can just rewrite a lot of chassidus in a way where people that shaloi lishma, looking for self-help, they'll find it. Many people look out there. We have, mamash, the Torah gave us the ideas. We have to know how to reword them. The closest that we have to that in our experience, I loved your Shabbos, he doesn't write it in the mind, but that's great. He writes like this, that in your mind, meaning in your understanding, not in your thoughts, it's a whole different, in your understanding, when it realizes that there is something much greater than what it knows, when it realizes that, it joyfully submits, yearns for, becomes open to some greater understanding. And it's done with pleasure. Yes, let me make a contrast. On the emotional level, there is a conflict. You know, we have different emotions. I'm speaking about in the context of some emotions are coming from my ego. There are emotions that come from the greater neshama. Sometimes they are aligned. But when they are at conflict, one will have to give in to the other. And that process is a struggle. It's not a geshma, it's a humbling process. It's difficult. It's a difficult process and it's a breakdown. It means even when people do that and they see the light, but it's not comfortable. Or use any word that fits more what you experience. The place within us where when there are two opposites, there's opposition, and we allow for the lower part of us to completely submit to the greater part in us, and there is no experience of struggle, there is no pain, there's no breakdown, there's pleasure. That is when we understand that there's some idea out there, that idea is going to completely dismiss what we know. It's much bigger. We're going to have to give up the old understanding for the new understanding, and we want it, and we submit to it, and the whole experience is pleasurable. A big part, beruchnius, of learning Torah is that Torah's ideas, Torah shebal peh are ideas. But we know, when I say we, the part in us that knows what we don't yet know. There is something in the Torah that's so much greater than ideas. It's mamash, it's godliness, it's light. You word it to, it's infinity, only in the Torah. We're not yet refined enough to be aware of it the way we should be. But the reason why people like learning isn't only because the ideas are geshmak. Well, let me learn something. Let me learn Torah. It's because in the Torah there is something that is infinitely greater than our understanding, it will break away your understanding. People say, tell me, enlighten me. I know, where do you win over people the easiest is in the world of thoughts, world of ideas. When people say, well, let the ideas compete, people say that, and the winning idea will win. And the winning idea, when it wins, it's almost a hallelujah. I think people celebrate it. I saw that. Unless the ego is very coarse, like I have to be right. When people get older, I don't have to be right. I'm looking for the emes. I see things one way. If you can, adaraba, that's adaraba, such a yeshivish expression. The opposite. And they mean it. There is real bittul. The mind naturally gives itself over to an idea that currently is much bigger than me, that I cannot see. I want that. I would prefer to know what I cannot know, because it's that big, than to be stuck in me. And we don't find that on an emotional level. Find me a person that's willing to give up their stuff that they emotionally like. It means even the alcoholic, a mushel, who knows how destructive it is, will have moments where he emotionally will say, I don't want to give this up. I understand, I'm saying emotionally, and if he has to, it's going to be painful. In other words, there are areas in our lives where bittul is painful, or at least there is a struggle. And the area in our life, other than our very life, other out there watching a lamb being bottled to, we just don't see enough lambs. We don't know enough, I don't know enough animals, I do know dogs. And I think that some attraction that people have to dogs is the loyalty. A lamb is much more loyal. You can't compare. Much. In other words, maybe I'm not a big maven, so I'm going to write a book on this. A dog, for his own self-interest, wants to do what the master wants. I don't know a dog. Yechanushkan dog. That was a big avoider for me not to have a dog. I can tell you right away. By me, first of all, nothing against you guys who have dogs, gesunte hate. By me, it was, they want a dog, get a goldfish. It worked for many years until they chopped. And huh? Anyways, that's a, I'm not saying this. That's a little bit of a jest.
That's a question. With Alter Rebbe, though, it was, yeah. He wasn't meant that he was specifically told not to be a sheep, because a sheep follows, and they'll follow anywhere, and they'll be followed off a cliff. But
the
Alter Rebbe was.
What this discussion is trying to bring out is that we have a couple of things before the Maimer that we have to just be on the same page. That life in the inner life will constantly present to us things in which we will have to choose what me am I bringing to the table. Who's coming to the table? When you walk into your dining room table, who is walking there? Okay, and whatever, who's what you're working? No, there are two yous. Let's be, there are two yous. And they are in conflict. So I was speaking to a bunch of guys by the Fabrengen. What's very normal is that you can have people, speaking by the men, that can sit for 2 hours and have a very elevated conversation. But the person who comes home is not that person. With the greater challenge, like we mentioned, like this humble guy over there in that village, that me, you're kidding? I was so spiritualized. I was so lofty. I was contemplating different levels of Mesiras Nefesh, which was true and which remains true. But there are two me's. Once a person sees that, it's just a matter of time, then how do I bring them together? And there is a it's painful. Alter Rebbe is proposing that some of that avoida is not going to be painful. What's the key? The key is understanding. When people get together and they understand that there is a part in me that has to be submissive to a greater part in me, that understanding is where there is no tension. In the understanding, in the feelings, there's a conflict.
Someone who's into self-help is more of a humble
Everyone isn't into self-help.
But not everybody's into self-help. Like, they might want it, like you said, the men in the front brain, they're talking about, but they go home and they're just the same person.
But everyone is, in other words, I'm just saying a man because I'm a man. That's by women also, I'm sure, in their own way. I'm just saying this. In other words, what we begin in the first stage of the life is that we develop one part of us and it's disconnected from the other part of us, which is why the elevation here has no effect here. It doesn't have an effect. At some point, what I'm talking about, the humility, is the lower self becoming humble to the greater self, which most people will experience when things happen to them that they cannot take. That's how they'll experience it. That something out there, what's really happening is that these two parts that are in conflict are finally seeing each other. And then there is a struggle. Who will become, we will always have both. Who is going to give in to the other? Who will give in to the other? That's self-help. That's the self-help. That's a universal avoida. It's not a universal avoida. Torah has certain insights. It's enlightening. And the Alter Rebbe is enlightening us with that even though we normally experience that to be a difficult avoida, it's hard. It would be easier not to do it. It's much easier not to see it. There is one part of it that's seamless. And that is when we are in the world of our understanding. In the psychological world, this is not a painful, it's actually something that people look forward to. You want to be enlightened. When a person asks, okay, where do I do that in the Fabrengen? I think every person wants to hear it. They want to hear it from someone that's objective, that's not out to get them, because we all have that. So we hear the story that, made the most humblest go to the Bima to get the Sefer Torah. I think the mind is asking, I wish I knew, where am I in this story? I wish I knew. And most of us don't know. Why do we mean it there. Psychologically, it won't be painful. It'll be, finally, I see it. Thank God. Now, from seeing it to changing, oh my God, that's difficult. That's because then you have to internalize it and we are not our understanding. It's just a tool that we have. And the Alter Rebbe, look at these words, that whenever the Torah writes a lamb with the letters Chaf, Vez, Shin, it's amazing. Vez, it's Chachma. Shin are the emotions. So the way we go about it, the normal way we go about it, is that first we have to, in the Chachma, see where the conflict is, because it's easier, it doesn't hurt that much. Acknowledge, intellectually, okay, I get it. And many people even laugh at themselves. And I don't think it's such this is so funny. Because what should we do? Should we cry? Crying is painful. Laughing is less painful. Like the emotions, we don't know what to do emotionally with that. But the mind doesn't laugh. The mind doesn't say, I see it. I get it. This is how I do it. This is what I do. This is my blind spot. Like, I don't want to have a blind spot. And I really don't. My mind doesn't. My emotions do. There's a part of me that is insisting on not having the blind spot because it doesn't want to give up that which it loves. Why would it give it up? We don't want to give it up, even though we know that we have to give it up. So what? So at least begin in the mind, bring things together. Know more. Know yourself better. The beginning of Tanya is about knowing yourself. The Tanya is about God. It begins with you. But you have this soul and you have that soul. You're kidding? Which book? That's mamash, a self-help book. In Torah, you never had that. The goal is to get to know God. But who is getting to know God? Who's coming to the table to know? Who am I? I have to know who am I to connect to God. That's the Alter Rebbe's Chiddush. And then you have to work with the Shin is the heart. The Shin is where it's three, right? You have three. You have this. And you have the center. You have the right. You have the left. There are moments, says the Alter Rebbe, there are moments, if we were only to tap into, let's say, the lamb in us, there are moments in which on some lofty level, You're going to put the shin, flip the shin upside down. And the point, which is the top where the three come together, on that level, there's no conflict, even on the levels of emotions. The purpose, technically, of bringing the carbon on Shavuos, which were two loaves of bread and the two lambs, that carbon was in order to spiritually make more available the capacity in which, even on the emotional level, the harmony between these two opposites within us should be more like soul and body, which means easier, theoretically, seamless, because when it's seamless, we'll all get there. It's part of the insight of the holiday of Shavuos. This is more or less what the Alter Rebbe is proposing. Or to say it in different words, when a person is doing avodah, inner work, and they're trying to humble their ego, and they are owning up the fact that it's not being humbled, you should know, I should know, that there'll be moments, God's grace, in which one will be gifted where there's going to be a good harmony.
Is it das?
Could be. There are such moments. Not that I'll be there forever. I won't. We're not meant to be there forever. You know, part of life is to struggle. It's like the guy that's jogging, and you're driving by him, and you tell him, we're going in the same direction. I'll give you a ride. Like, you idiot. His goal is not to get there. His goal is to jog there. I'm saying that's what God wants from us. When we want to, I'll just go on the psychedelics, and I'll that's hopping the ride. It's the same idea. I'm trying to get somewhere without effort, and I'm missing part of life. I'm not gaining part of life. I'm losing part of my life. But on the other hand, every now and then comes a Shavuos. There is the time where we are meant to have an experience in which we can put together these conflicting powers within us without pain. But the union is humility. And you should know, the more we unite that, the more we unite with each other. The root of the reasons why people have a hard time with the other, that's the way it works, is because my conflict is always within me. Since I don't want to see that within me, it's much more convenient to see it with you, and that's the way it works. No, it's the people that are around you, that which bothers you the most about them is exactly your biggest fault. Mamish. And go eat that. And the more... No. Mamish. That's a good way of knowing. If you want to know, what are my faults? That which you see in the other, the most, the worst, that's you, mamish. No, I'm kind, that's cruel, exactly. That's why there's a blind spot. And you have to see it in you. It's not just good enough to believe. But once you see it, then you have what to work with. And every now and then comes a Shavuos, comes a kesev. The shin before the base represents that the emotions are already united on the root. They're together. God is one. Everything comes from one God. That means in the source, everything is one. Whenever we get closer to the source, there's going to be a greater capacity of seeing opposites. When you get even deeper to the source, you can already see how it's shayech for them to be together without struggle. There's no struggle within God. So when people ask, what does God's revelation look like? When we're very underdeveloped, you're going to see something. God is unseeable. What does Kedusha look like? What's the answer? The answer is, huh? What was that? A certain inner oneness. A certain inner oneness that you will experience. Most people are not ready to hear these words because they don't even see the duality to understand what oneness will look like. But when people come to the place where they see the conflict within them and they work and they see that they cannot resolve it, it's unresolvable, then they should also know that in the few moments that you resolved it, don't think it was you. It was God's grace. That's called Giloy, your neshama came out. Not just the godly soul, the part in you that can bring together all of you. And the more people have that, the more union they have amongst each other. Or if you're going in the other direction, which is the direction that might be easier, because it's very difficult to see within, that the more we promote unity amongst each other, then we have a greater ability of beginning to see the conflict within us. Because if I see the conflict out there, if I'm spending all my time being angry at Hamas and at America and about all of those who are betraying us, then we don't have the time or the capacity to see how we are betraying ourselves. Spend some time doing that. Whatever everyone is gripped with, and how people want to kill us, there's a part in me that wants to kill my neshama also, just as bad. V'chulei.
Always.
Question is, when Hamas on October 7th, that was not the time to say, oh my God, I want to kill me. No, now it's time to pick up a gun and kill them. In other words, the question is, what should I be doing? But there was a time and a place to get into that space. And people want to say, yeah, exactly. What's my opposition? People around you, whatever you see in them that you really cannot take, that's you, that you don't even want to see in you. And it's not so easy to see it, because a part in us doesn't want to give it up. And part of it, holding on to it, is by making me blind of me. That's the best trick. Just don't see it. Not that seeing it is giving it up, but that's the first step. So there's a lot of challenge, but most people see it at some point. And the Maimer takes it from there, that when you want to bring it together, your mind will always accept a union. Your mind, chachma, base. The base is b'chachma, bansa, bias. That's the pasuk the Alter Rebbe quotes.
Isn't it usually bina?
Yes.
So kasha. What does that mean in English?
That with wisdom you build a house. A house represents a place where different energies live in. A home, family, and the house is that koyach of embracing all of the components in a home in a non-conflicting way. Shalom ba. In other words, there's a harmony.
So can you talk a little bit about just practically what would be, it seems like you're talking about kind of building the neshama, caring for the neshama instead of being angry at the world who wants to kill our bodies and neshamas. Like, can you talk about practically what that means?
Well, if we're witnessing right now in the world mm-hmm. a tremendous amount of cruelty mm-hmm. that hides behind innocent, just think about that. So let's think about our ability of perpetrating evil to my soul, hiding behind innocence.
What does that mean exactly for us?
I would say most people that we know, including ourselves, are not going to blatantly do something cruel, horrible. We're going to do what we want to do, which is ego-driven, ultimately not okay, but it's going to be camouflaged in the camouflage of innocence.
Can you just give an example? What would that be? What does that look like?
When a parent is being cruel to the child, but they're not going to see that they're being cruel, they're going to be innocently educating them. They're going to take something of innocence mm-hmm. and they're going to use that as a cover to some deeper phenomena that's happening between a parent and a child. And they won't see it as cruel. They're going to insist, no, if I'm not going to give my child consequence, then they'll learn that you can do things and not have consequence and all these things, which have a truth to them. Evil hiding behind innocence. I think this might be a good starting point. I never thought, I'm just answering to you, made me think in that direction. If it's out there, so it's in here. So there are times that people do things and they know what I'm doing is not okay. On one level, halavai, at least you know it's not okay. I'm not saying people should do it. That's you can deal with that a lot easier with.
It's like after the sentence, what was the sentence? It's a ban sabisa. Was it chachma?
B'chachma.
Ban sabivels biyada tersena. That's the end of it. So it can also be broken. So probably
it can be destroyed. Yeah. In other words, exactly. Innocence is the most beautiful thing in the world, and innocence is the most destructive thing in the world. Almost all sin begins with innocence, I would argue, for people that are normal, for people that were not, that are not, God forbid, bad people. It begins with innocence. Innocence.
So what's the remedy for that?
Is to be aware that whenever something appears to be innocent, to question, is it innocent? Or is it something deeper that's using innocence as a human shield for it not to stop? That religion, that frumkeit, is used for cruelty. I mean, that's something that everyone sees. I don't know. I'm saying it's already known that. It's seen that.
How is it used as cruelty? You're saying in like,
whenever the educator is trying to inspire or educate the initiate in becoming more frum, the potential of there being cruelty is so big that it's hard even to see that being done without cruelty. When a child breaks a rule and the reaction of the parent will be harsh, is it coming from a place of objectivity and real concern for the well-being, or is it coming from, there's a cruel streak in me and finally I have a place where I'm allowed to vent it. It's a mitzvah. Well, I'm being cruel. I'm doing the right thing.
Also ego.
That's what I meant, ego, yeah. Listen, we all have that. It's almost, we're not meant to be angels, just to at least to see it. So you're doing something good, and you're doing something horrible. At least see there's both. I don't even see the horrible, I just see the good. A parent hitting a child is the greatest example. And I don't mean only physically, on any level. That's it. That's a Hamas type of energy. Lahavdil. And the reason why the person does it is because they have within them cruelty or intolerance or some and they don't even want to see that. It's not it was done to them. I'm not saying that they're guilty of. Someone was cruel to them, and someone was cruel to them. This is the primordial sin. These things began in the beginning. But to stop it, you have to see it. And you have to separate out the good from the bad. And the area in which it could be caught won't be emotionally. Because emotionally, there's too much at stake. That's the Mort of Alter Rebbe. Emotionally, there's a conflict. So if I'm going to, in other words, are we meant to live a life in our minds? No. But this has to be done with Seichel. This process is a seichel dika process, because there's no other part in me that will subject myself to it other than my understanding that, oh, I got to see things different. And we are excited. There's a pleasure, the Alter Rebbe says. There is a pleasure. We know that. The reason why people like traveling, this is what this is ultimately. The pleasure of traveling, the pleasure. And the pleasure is so great that people spend a lot of money and they go through a lot of physical hardship. Mamish. They don't even look at it that way. Good for them. Because what are they? That trip is this trip. It's seeing it differently. Or the biggest downer is when someone wants to go to Greece. And tell them, why don't you go to Greece? Same thing as here. You're taking away their pleasure of living. Like, what do you make such a big fuss out of it? Right? You're laughing. That means you know that person.
Sometimes
either it's you or it's your spouse. One of the two.
Sometimes it changes.
So you say, so get to change here. You need to change. You're stuck with you. You think you're going to go over there? It's going to be different. Why you're going? Send someone else. That will be a change.
It's also very scary. It's like the sheep thing. It's like the following sheep thing. Where
you're getting scared with the sheep.
What if you... Mm-hmm. No, I get very scared with the sheep, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because what if you are wrong?
I know.
It's very scary.
Good, live in that fear. That's a good fear. By the way, we have fear prior. You need a hook to hang up the fear. Don't think something made you afraid. Let's make that clear. I have fear. I just don't know. I don't know. Since I can't explain it, so I have to deny it. Then when someone scared me and I get all scared, I say, aha, you made me afraid. No. I have fear. So you found now a hat to hook up your fear of following. Something about following like a lamb is scary for you because you witnessed it in the wrong way, Mistam. And that's another thing. Like you follow the wrong person. Oh my God. People waste half of their lives doing that. Innocently. All of us. In other words, we followed people that we looked up to. It takes a lot of maturity to finally realize that that part was great and that part could have been a lot better. And to live with that. It shouldn't break you down.
Even like if you learn something, like what if you're understanding it wrong?
We are also, let's begin. We're learning, we're not understanding it as good as we could. Let's start with that. And the desire of understanding it better and the pleasure we have in that, and there's a pleasure in that. Aha, now I get it. Even when you understand, yourself in a new way, it's mamish pleasure. Mamish, tainug, because there's no conflict. Now, to internalize it, whoo, oh my God. But that is a first step. And someone finally pointed out to you your flaw. Pointing out the flaw in your fellow is the greatest kindness you can do for them, the right way, if you care for them. The biggest kindness.
But then you see it in yourself. So it's really a tough.
That's the biggest kindness you're doing to yourself also. That's the next. I'm just saying that when people get together, when good chaverim, when people get in and say, wow, you're amazing, that it's not only immaturish, it's cruel. It's cruel. It comes from not caring. It's selfish. I want you to like me, so I'm going to see in you what you want me to see in you and everything. No. Pointing out the flaw, the beginning, is the first act of kindness that we can do. With your friends.
With your friends.
And I want you to know that used to be a Chassidish Fabrengen. That used to be when people got it the wrong way. When people got together and they would ask each other, I saw this, tell me, what's my blind spot? But they would ask it to someone who had no agenda. Which is a great exercise. That's a good chaver. And then the next step is if I see it so good in you, then I should write it down and go find it in me.
Marriage.
Go find it in me. And on that level, it'll be amazing. Wow, I see myself in a different light. And it's also going to be very painful emotionally. You see, on the emotional level, it's conflict. The seichel is dancing and the heart is crying. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai explained to his son the meaning of the Churban HaBayis. The meaning of the Churban HaBayis. And he explained to him something so amazing that the Zohar writes, Goyim took this image and they concretized it. They stole it from us. That one side of his mouth was laughing, and the other side of his mouth or face was crying. Because he understood what it meant. But then there's a Churban. The conflict between the pleasure of understanding and the pain of the reality. So it means also that if a person is in big pain because of reality, they should tap into also the joy of them understanding it. That will give them the endurance, the balance to the pain. And when a person is so happy about their new understanding, which can lead to arrogance, they should tap into how painful it is on the emotional level to balance it.
All work in progress.
They're all work in progress. To be continued.